You will sleep better than you have ever slept. You've never been this relaxed. Are you ready to change your life?
I'm Rusty Diamond, certified hypnotist. You don't need to leave your house. You can stay in your bed. You can stay in your favorite chair. You just need a computer or your phone. You can get a hold of me. Stay at home. I'll make your life better.
HypnosisIsGreat.com.
It's Rusty Diamond, motherfucker. It's Rusty Diamond, motherfucker.
Yo, man. Oh, Miss Rusty, what's happening, everybody? Welcome to the Public Access Podcast, the podcast here on the Rusty Diamond Podcast Network. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If you are watching this on YouTube or Rumble, and you say, gosh, I love the content, I love the guest, but I don't want to look at his face. You don't have to. You don't have to. You can go anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can find the Public Access Podcast. Or if you are listening to this and you want to watch this, you can. It's pretty easy. All you have to do is go into YouTube or Rumble or whatever, the Public Access Podcast. Not Public Access Podcast, but the Public Access Podcast. And that is how you do that. Pretty easy and pretty cool, if you ask me. And speaking of pretty cool, it's time for me to bring out my special guest right here and right now. And my special guest right here and right now is Bailey Hauser. How you doing, Bailey?
What's up, Rusty? I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'll even let people in on that. So I had to ask about your last name.
Yeah.
I had to make sure about that. I forgot about it. I was thinking about it beforehand. Side note to go. Okay. So yesterday, yesterday I was recording an episode. It's not going to get released. And so, in the opening of the show, it says this a number of times. Says Rusty Diamond in there a few times.
Yeah.
And got about like 2 minutes into it, and I got called Dusty. And I was like, okay, well, shit. And then just everything kind of went downhill from
there.
It just
kind of snowballed after that, huh?
It snowballed after that. And like, I wanted to make sure that I got your name pronounced right. And then I was doing it and I was like, oh, fuck. Like, I need to make sure I got it right. And so like, I put it in there. And so thank you for that.
Yeah, it's no problem. And I can tell you, I have been called worse working, you know, in inpatient treatment centers. So I've been called lots of things. And so just go with the flow now.
Yeah, me too. And my last name gets different. My last name gets pronounced wrong a lot. And I was at the doctor last week and he gave me a joke saying that, asking if I was related to an actor who had a similar spelling of my last name. And I was like, well, okay, that's could be problematic. You're not really paying attention to that, but I don't know what you're gonna do. So thank you for being on. I'm happy to have you on here, and you having a conversation longer than 12 minutes.
Yeah,
Maybe.
it's I'm excited to be here. So I really like what I talk about. And so it's always fun for me to have a platform where I get to educate, but I also get to nerd out a little bit and talk about it in a more like educational manner than like an actual therapy session. So it's a nice break for me.
What got you into the nerding out part of it? Where you was it like something you immediately gravitated to and went on to
Oh.
everything? And I'm gonna try not to go and answer. I'm sorry, like to ask too many questions you normally get. I'm trying
No,
to
it's
keep
totally
it kind of
fine.
off, but I'm curious about that one. Like, what was it that kind of got the nerding out part where you couldn't stop researching one? Was it one aspect of it, or was it kind of everything as a whole, or was it
I think it
some
was,
event?
I think it really just kind of correlated with my, if you will, field experience. And so, you know, being a therapist, working with clients, and then I started to see things, and then I start to dig into that, right? And kind of want to know, like, what is the etiology behind it? You know, what are the percentages of the population that struggle with it? What are the most effective interventions for it? And so I just really like that aspect of having that information, and kind of on a vulnerable level, it makes me feel more safe when I'm in a therapy session to be a little bit more knowledgeable.
Absolutely. And so then I don't know, because then that's so then are you Googling stuff, and then does that do anything with your algorithms elsewhere? Do you think other things start popping up? Also, there's the whatever that theory is of the you don't know it's there until you see it once, and then you see it everywhere. I forgot what that's called, but
Yeah, the I just call it the blue car phenomenon, right? You see lots of
That's what it's called. Yeah, the blue car phenomenon.
yeah, so I think I have to be a little careful with the stuff that I Google, right? I'm surprised that
Right?
the FBI or like the sex crimes unit hasn't, you know, barricaded or barged down through my house and tore my door down. But it usually starts off more with other colleagues who are in the field, and I ask questions that way. And then I usually gravitate more towards what are they called? Like scholarly articles and journals and stuff like that. But
Like
yeah,
Google Scholar.
there's definitely a lot of Googling weird stuff.
Yeah, I'd imagine there'd be a lot of that. And I don't know if yeah, all of a sudden you're getting, ads for whatever. I mean, I don't know what your personal ads would be. And so like it would be probably interesting. And then so yeah, I mean, then there's Google Scholar. You can kind of find anything you really need to find right there, all kinds of the scholarly interviews and articles. Or but then there's also TikTok. I was just talking about this with a group of people, like a podcast meetup group that I'm in, and they were talking about where to find completely unbiased media. And like, I mean, where do you find it? But I mean, some people report just the facts, but everything's always kind of got a little bit of a thing. But like, I like TikTok, and I like there's a lot of like, I get TikTok things from the man on the street just going up and like seeing what's going on, like someone just saying stuff just because without kind of for no reason, just because they have a platform to talk. And sometimes I feel there's definitely some bullshit in there, but there's also some people just hitting some real truths that I don't think would be discovered as easily
Yeah.
elsewhere. And a shout out to TikTok. But yeah, I don't know. So then are you getting like when you go to your other colleagues, are you ever finding clients or potential clients that you will hand off to somebody else who may be able to work with them better, like you're not really vibing with them? Or do you ever like have a time where it's be
Yeah,
like,
so
well,
there,
yeah.
that's kind of a that's a big question, because two things. One, arguably, our code of ethics kind of prevents us from being like, I don't like this person. I should just send them off. That's why we have things like supervision and, we have continuing education credits and stuff like that to try to jump that barrier ourselves. But if for some reason we have a client that is showing behaviors, traits that is outside of our wheelhouse, then we're at the same time ethically obligated to refer out, right?
Right.
And so, I've worked a lot so I'm a addiction therapist and a trauma therapist, and I've worked mostly with substance abuse and sex addiction. And so I've worked a lot with non-adjudicated sex offenders, but working with adjudicated sex offenders, there's a lot of kind of specialty layers of trainings for that. And so that would usually be something that I would refer out for.
The ones that have been
Yeah, that
have had
have
some
a
sort of
formal record.
a form. Okay, that's a
Yeah.
okay way to put it. So is there a what's kind of the bigger group that are working with you or your other colleagues? Is it more people who have been have a formal record or people who don't have a formal record?
Typically, people who don't have a formal record, that's usually the majority of the population. And, they come for a variety of reasons. Most of the time, when we're talking about sex addiction, it's mostly because of relationship pressures from partners, spouses, that kind of thing. But I think it's a little bit different when you talk about substance abuse because, I'll have a lot of people who are on parole or probation. And they've been ordered by a judge to attend treatment for that. So there's legal involvement more on one side of the fence than the others, as far as population is concerned.
Okay. And so then, I mean, what happens then? I mean, what kind of different steps do you have to take, I guess, in each of those as far as like, let's say you hit a roadblock. I mean, do you have to, I mean, do you tell someone, like, do you like do a pre-screening kind of deal and then find out like, hey, yeah, this person should be going to someone else that's doing it or someone that might like, I don't know, because like I have people who come to me and like I can tell we're not going to be a good fit. Like I don't think this person's going to like me. Or I might not like them. But I know somebody else who I think they would get along really well with. Do you pass people off like that ever, or is that something else?
It just depends on the where I'm working. And so most of my career I've worked in inpatient treatment centers. And so kind of Hollywood rehabs, right? Things that you think of sending somebody to stay for 30 to 60 days or what have you. And when it comes to that, if you want the real answer, if you want the PR answer,
Well, your choice. You can say whatever you want on here.
The real answer is, when you work for a facility that is run, and I've worked mostly in insurance-run facilities, owners and business models, they're not going to turn people away if they can bill insurance for it. And that's just the nature of the beast when it comes to, facilities and seeking help. So it's not that black and white. When I was a therapist in residential treatment, we might have somebody who has a little bit of a substance use issue. And, I can make the recommendations all day long that this is not the appropriate place or level of care. But at the end of the day, I'm just kind of a minion, and, the upper echelon are not really going to listen to me on that as far as
Right.
like billing insurance and having money and keeping them in treatment. But if it is very clear that they need a different type of treatment, then usually there's enough there to advocate to get them to the appropriate space. So residential didn't really have a choice. You work with who you work with. Private practice, it's it kind of, you tend to get referrals based off of your specialty. And so, I would get a few people who came to me for, anxiety and depression. That's kind of bell-shaped curve. Most people struggle with stuff like that. So can I treat it? Yes. But I tended to work with people who were more like that had a higher acuity. And so I would tend to work with people who were significant addicts, right? So high acuity in their addiction. And so it kind of just weeds the process and the, what is it called when you like my profile, my Psychology Today, my marketing, that's the word I'm looking for. It kind of attracts a certain type of population based off of my specialty anyways. And so, if I had somebody who came to me that did have this, but they had another issue, and maybe that other issue was a little bit more prominent and that really wasn't in my wheelhouse, then I would give them the option. I'd have a conversation with them and say, like, hey, I can treat this, but I can't really treat that. So it's kind of your call on what you think you want to focus on, because I can't really address this with you. So we can refer you out to somebody who can.
Yeah. And then, okay, so do you ever get any calls that are off, that are not really like at all what you do, and someone calls up and I don't know, is either way off and you're like, I don't know why you called me, like you should be calling something else, like right here, or else someone is just I don't know. Or someone is just like, oh, kind of, I guess, kind of weird phone call. A phone call that's not a everyday phone call. People trying to sell you something weird. Any of that stuff, or.
Yeah, I mean, so when I was in private practice, that's usually when the weirder stuff would happen. And I would have, they have apps. So nobody could see like my personal cell phone. So I'd have an app that would was my business line. So it was the same device, but a different phone number. And I can't tell you how many penis pictures that I would get on a regular
Oh,
basis.
sure. And it just shows up, like, oh.
And then, I'm just like, I'm not responding to this, right? Like,
Right.
but yeah, and I would have to come home and tell my husband and be like, hey, I just want you to know that I, have a penis picture on my phone. But
Yeah,
I
someone.
didn't, I didn't
Yeah.
start it, I didn't do it. And he would just be like, yeah, because he's so used to, the nature of my work. He'd just be like, yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, it's I mean, yeah, there's gonna be that, and what can you do? And I think anybody that doesn't have a business phone is wild for that. Especially people, anyone who's into any sort of helping people out, like at all. I mean, one
Yeah,
thing,
for sure.
Google Voice is free, and it's the same thing as you're saying with that app. Like you can just, it goes right to this phone here. I just recently turned this off, just to take messages now, because I can't tell, that's one thing I guess that I don't like about it. I can't tell when someone's calling for my personal phone or for whatever. And so I don't answer the phone, like, hi, this is hypnosis is great. How can I help you? Or something like that is like,
Yeah.
oh, hello. And yeah, I had someone call me last night at like 9 o'clock and was like asking me, like, oh, why didn't you answer your phone as hypnosis is great? And then asked me if I had any women that were working there that were available to talk. And then I was like, okay, wait, so maybe this is like a someone that is trying to get information to like sell me something, like sell me some sort of thing, or else this Yelp or something wanting to, because Yelp or someone like that will call me up. And then I was like, wait, okay, so what's going on? And then they're like, okay, never mind. I'm like, okay, well, so yesterday was kind of a weird day, so I'm just sort of, I guess, kind of decompressing from
Yeah.
that. But But yes, I mean, yeah, you get, I don't know, 'cause then with, so with that, then with getting dick pics and stuff, like, I mean, so do you, so you're not doing private practice anymore?
No, I listen, I had to take a break. I was doing residential and outpatient, and then I was doing outpatient and private practice, and I was doing residential and private practice. And so for the last, I don't know, 4 years, I was doing kind of two jobs at the same time. And you know, as a therapist, and I specialize in some pretty heavy hitting stuff, right? Trauma and addiction is it takes a toll on people, and arguably it takes a toll on a therapist to kind of be in that, you know, 6 to 8 hours every day for year, you know, year after year. And especially working in an inpatient, you don't get holidays off, right? Because it's 24/7. And
Yeah.
so I was just like, I need to kind of step back and take a little bit more of a break. And so I still work, I still do trauma and addiction work, but I work, my schedule and the expectations are much, much lower. And so it's kind of like a reset button for me right now.
And yeah, so was it one day you just decided like I'm good, that's it? Or was it something that was kind of building and some someone called you Haley or something? So,
So,
sorry.
yeah, kind of all of a sudden and all in, you know, over time. Yeah, I think it was building up. I was aware of it. I was aware of, you know, the upcoming burnout, right? And the day-to-day grind. And fortunately, you know, I've done a lot of therapy myself. I try to be pretty self-aware and I try to stay pretty healthy. And I was aware that this was going to start affecting my clients negatively if I did not make a decision. And so I just made the decision when it was a good time, when I had, you know, kind of some low risk clients on my caseload, and I started to kind of stop taking referrals and weeded everybody out and did it in a kind of gradual, slow way. So I didn't just like throw my hands up and say, all right, screw you guys, I'm out, you know, like I'm getting burnt out. Like good luck with your, you know, step four in your inventory, you know, but I definitely gave them some time and space to process it, and then I kind of took a step back. And so again, I still work in that same silo under that same umbrella, but it's just definitely not as high acuity. I know I keep saying that, but and it's not as intense as it was.
That's pretty admirable going and being able to stick through that too and not just bail on them. So
Yeah.
yeah, be able to get to a good stopping point to close that book and hand it off to someone else, you
Yeah,
know,
for
and
sure. Make sure that they're all squared away, they're all set up. You know, we processed me leaving. If they had abandonment issues, we talked about that, you know, signed releases. We tried to make it as seamless as possible.
And yeah, and so then what was that first day off like?
I think I was still in like go mode, right? You know, probably for a couple of weeks after that, I was still kind of turned on, you know, cognitively, emotionally. And it probably took 2 or 3 weeks of vacation, if you will, for me to be like, oh, okay, all right. And, you know, my husband made a comment probably a few couple months, a few months after it. I'm kind of an introvert at my core. Right. Like I like doing stuff like this because I feel like it's good information for people to have. And plus it's just like one-on-one. I do really good one-on-one. But I think being a therapist has made me really antisocial. And, you know, for years I was very, very, very picky about who I would spend my time with, what time of day, how many days a week. I mean, I just almost kind of was like a hermit because I needed to recharge so much. And my husband made a comment after kind of leaving the high intensity pace and going to a much more calm dynamic. He was like, wow, like you're fun again. Not that you were boring before, but you're not as intense, right? There's not like you can handle crowds a little bit better. You can handle conversations with friend groups a little bit longer than you usually could. And I joke with the people that I work with now. I work in a school setting, and so I work alongside teachers, and I'll, get to know them and talk to them, and they're like, "Oh, you're so outgoing." And I was like, "You have no idea." I was like, "I'm pretty sure I became socially stunted, right?" 'Cause like 40 hours a week, I was just like talking about the hardest, darkest stuff. And then you leave that, and people would want to small talk with me, and I'm like, "I don't care. I don't care." I'd go to the grocery store. "How's your day?" "It's fine. Thank you." "Well, looks like this is going to happen today." Or, "Have you read the newspaper?" And I'm like, "Nope. Nope. Don't care."
Do you know what the fuck I just heard? Like,
What?
no, what you're saying, like what you're
Oh.
saying in your head. Like, do you know what the fuck I heard today? Like, do you know, like
Oh,
how do I?
yeah.
And you're
Yeah.
asking me like, oh, it looks like it might rain in 30 minutes. Oh, holy shit! Wow. Okay. Okay. Well, someone just told me some r really fucking sad shit. Like,
Yeah.
and I'm fucking processing that now. So like, I can't take what you're fucking talking about right now. Like, I don't give
Yeah,
a shit that's gonna be raining in 30 minutes. Like,
I'm like, I don't care about, your vegetable garden. I mean, good for
right.
you.
Yeah.
And it sounds callous and it sounds all these things, but like, and the other thing is being a therapist, people treat you real weird. People are real weird around you. And if I wanted to take it a level more, telling them that I'm a sex addiction therapist, people get real weird, right?
Yeah, and so I mean, do you get like, don't know. I remember seeing this comic of someone saying that they were, it was like someone said that they're a dentist, and everyone kept coming up to him at the party asking him to like look at their mouth. And then eventually he just ended up saying, I'm a proctologist. And so, like, is that ever something with you? But I mean, you nerd out on it. And like, that's kind of how I am. Like, it's people are eventually going to talk about it, and it's like, well, okay, I guess this is what we're talking about. Like, hell yeah, let's fucking talk about it. But I mean,
Honestly,
where's
I think people don't. My anecdotal perspective, my experience has been people, excuse me, when I'm like, "Oh, I'm a sex addiction therapist," most people get naturally cautious and defensive rather than curious. Very rarely have I met people and they're like, "That is so fascinating. So, what is sex addiction? Like, what does it look like? Is it as common as we think it is?" Most of the time when I tell them that, it's like I literally was going to the grocery store after work one day. I was, at a local Kroger and I'm buying my, like whatever, my hummus and carrots. And I'm checking out and, this person is just so bubbly and so happy to be there. And I'm, getting off a shift and I just finished, six sessions and I'm just completely, I'm out. And they're talking and they're talking and they're talking and I'm nice and I'm cordial. Absolutely. Yes. And they're like, "What do you do?" And sometimes like I've learned to kind of just say like, "I work in public relations," like, or "I work with people." I keep it very vague, especially if I'm in a confined space, like an airplane. I don't tell people I'm a therapist.
Ooh,
But
yeah.
this particular interaction, I just was just like, "Oh, I'm a sex addiction therapist." It like before I could filter it. And this person like straight up just kind of stopped and said, "I don't watch that much porn." And I was just like,
Okay.
I said, "Listen, man, you do you. I'm not like, it's cool. I don't, it's all good." Like, and he was just like, "No, really, I just want you to know, like, I don't, like, it's not weird. I don't watch like weird porn and it's not all the time." And I was like, awesome. Great.
Yeah. So do you get people sometimes that think that you're analyzing them, like when you tell them that, like you're saying that, like this
All the time.
person probably thinks that right off the bat, like what is she thinking? Like, is she be digging into like what's going on in my head? And then, but like, I don't know why that's someone's first thought though. Like, I guess I can understand why it would be someone's first thought, but
Yeah, I get that
it's
all the time. Like,
interesting.
and it really is. It's kind of ostracizing being a therapist, if you will, because people really think that you're just dissecting them, psychologically, just, And the truth is, it's like, are you paying me $160 an hour right now?
Right.
No. So I'm
Yeah.
not putting that energy and that training into this dynamic. I'm off of work. I'm not in it. And most of the time it's just normal stuff. I'll just be like, oh, I like their shirt. They look really good in pink or gold or whatever. And then they'll just kind of be like, you're probably thinking about how dysfunctional my family is. And I'm like, I really I'm not thinking how dysfunctional your family is, but thanks for bringing it to my awareness.
Yeah, so why is your family dysfunctional? Well,
Yes, tell me
you
about it.
want to talk
Let's talk
about it,
about
you can
it.
talk about it. I'm going to probably just sit here and let you talk about it. I don't need to give my
Yeah.
input, my $160 input. But
Yeah.
I'm just you're bringing it up, so it's obviously something that's you want to talk about. If you want to talk about it, talk about it. Like, feel free. Like, we can have some conversation if you want. But like, why are you bringing that up?
Yeah.
Do
And
you, someone
other thing
else?
is people kind of want to, I don't want to use the word abuse because I don't want it to be that big, but they tend to overstep their boundaries and expect you to be a free therapist for them, right? And they'll come to me and they'll just be like, this happened and this happened and this happened. And it's usually not complete strangers, it's more acquaintances. And for whatever reason, they're just like, oh, I'll talk to Bailey. She's easy to talk to, right? And I've
Right.
just had to be really good at saying, it sounds like, this that you're really struggling with this and you'd really benefit from getting a therapist. And I'll
Yep.
tell them, like, I'm not your therapist and I'm not here. And so it's hard to find reciprocated, even just friendships, because people automatically put me in a category of, oh, you're a therapist, like you're all knowing. And that's not the case. We just help people figure out how to get from point A to point B. It's really not that, big of a deal, if you will.
Just guiding them along. They're
Yeah.
telling the story. All we're doing is just holding the back of their bicycle.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
give,
Yeah.
they're doing their thing, and you fucking need something, whatever. Hey, hello. But I
Yeah.
mean, it's okay. It's all right, and it's sometimes good to just be like, because maybe they hadn't thought of that. And maybe subconsciously they just keep coming back to you because, like you're saying this, like, oh, Bailey's always great to talk to. She's good at what she does. So like, I'm gonna for sure want to go and talk to her, and yeah, and then just be like, yeah, like, you have been talking to me what normally would be a therapist conversation, like. You can get somebody else, find somebody else. Obviously you and that person have a good rapport, and so like maybe find someone else that you think might be kind of like me, and then go work with that person, and
Yeah.
you're gonna be good. You're gonna be good.
Yeah,
You're gonna love it.
I keep a list on hand of people that I, respect, colleagues that I work with, and if they're like, hey, this is coming up, and I'll just, here's a bunch of referrals, here's a bunch of different, entities that can potentially help you. So I'm always happy to make connections for people for self-help, if you will, but I'm not gonna do all of that for you, because
Right. And I mean, it also goes and tells how much you believe in what you're doing, that it's, to find somebody else who, would be able to do something. As we were talking earlier with the inpatient places, just kind of taking whoever, because when there's someone else that could work better than them, but it's easy money. And like, I mean, there's people I know that they would be a lot better off with somebody else than me. Like, I can just tell, like, we're not clicking right away. Like, I think somebody else, Lord, I'm happy to, because I believe in hypnosis and that much, because I'd rather have some, I don't want somebody to get kind of a half-ass experience with me thinking like, I want someone who can really put in their all
Yeah, for
to
sure.
what they're doing, and it's fucking important. It's important to get to that, and to let people know how well something can work, even if it's the almighty Rusty is not always number one,
Yeah,
and it's okay. There's
absolutely.
and yeah, and I mean, like, I've had I was like, for the longest time, I thought, I tried a couple of therapists when I was younger, and I was like, this sucks. This is shitty. Like,
Yeah.
who, what, what's with therapists? And then I had one when I was mid-30s and cool as fuck. I really liked her. And then I was like, everything turned around, and I was like, that changed my perspective on a lot of things. And I mean, it's like the same with doctors. Like, there's a fucking million doctors out there. You don't have to stick with one. And it's cool to, like, if you can find someone to work with. I mean, especially someone like yourself that would be working with very, very difficult and in-depth concerns. Like, I mean, you're taking a minute. Like, if they can really connect with you and have that best response, then fuck yeah. Then like,
Yeah.
then they're gonna, I mean, they can turn their whole perspective around, and like, maybe, then like, let's say one of the people that was working with you before you left, like, maybe they were like me and they were, like, I don't like any of this. And then they met you and they're like, fuck yeah, like, this turned everything around. Then, so when they're moving on to their next person, they're going to want to go find somebody else. And as opposed to just going like, yeah, okay, I guess that was all right. Like, especially if it's something that was court appointed, or, they're trying to just get something signed off. Because sometimes you get that, where it's people that will tell you whatever to get
Oh,
out
yeah.
of things. And or same with thing with relationships. I bet there's probably a lot of people who have said a lot of things just to kind of, get out of whatever. And I don't know. It's all, I mean, everything in life is really just kind of like how much energy you want to put into it, and like why you're there and why you're wanting this, and what, how are you gonna like make your life better? Why not? Like, you can make your life better. Why not make your life better?
Yeah, 100%. And I'll tell my people that I work with, I'll just be like, give it a shot for 3 sessions. If I'm not a good fit for you, I'm not everybody's cup of tea. Like, I'm a pretty intense person. Like, as a therapist, I don't waste a lot of time. I dig in pretty quickly. Like, I'm EMDR trained, and so I'm just like, you want to, let's do this. Let's dig deep. Let's cut it out. Like, cut the cancer out and do that. And some people just like, I'm too abrasive for them, right?
Right.
Or I've, the transference, the counter transference is too much. I had a client one time who, this was a rehab setting, and man, this guy just, he hated me so much. And I was like, what's up? What's like, what is that about? And essentially he had a super abusive redheaded stepmom, and I was a redhead, and I had similar mannerisms, and he was like, I can't work with you. Like, you get under my skin.
Interesting.
And I was just like, and that's fair. Totally
Yeah.
understand that. And so I was just, and so we made arrangements for him to work with a different therapist, and he did really well with a different therapist. But he was just like, that redheaded bitch right there,
Yeah.
nope. But I was just like,
Interesting.
don't take it personally.
Yeah, and I mean, that's wild, 'cause I mean, yeah, that would totally be something that could happen. And I don't know, I hadn't thought about that. That's I mean, yeah, some people just like want to be have their hand held along the whole way, and like every little step of the way, and that's the kind of care they need. But then that doesn't sound what really what you're get a fucking knife and cut this shit out, and then let's fucking rebuild from there. Where some other people are, wanting to take it a little slower, and really, Make sure
Yeah,
they're
I don't have
okay
time for
and
all
then
that.
do that. I
I don't have time for that.
don't either. I don't either. And like the people that can do it, great for them. And I know I have people call, I guess they're colleagues.
Yeah.
I don't work with them like in the same setting, but they're colleagues because they're all doing the same thing I'm doing. But like I'm happy to hand them off to them because I know that they're great at that stuff and that's how they work. And like,
Yeah.
good. That's not me. I'm gonna go. Yeah. Drop that fucking shit out, and then we're gonna rebuild you, and you're gonna be good.
Yeah, like the baby gloves, like, and again, it's just not my natural tendency and personality. And so if I have people who come to me who are like super dependent and need lots of, kid gloves, and you have to be real careful about what you say, like you said at the beginning, is I and I'll tell them, like, I don't know if this is going to be a good fit because this is not my go-to, right? I can try
Right.
to soften things up, but I can't guarantee that I'm going to be super consistent with that because that's just not my, my go-to. But you throw me a good someone who has, diagnosable narcissism. It's my jam. I'll do that all day because you don't have to, I don't have to tiptoe. I can be like, that's the dumbest shit I've ever heard, Steven. And he'll be like, maybe, Or I'll be like,
Right.
you're acting like such an asshole right now. And he'd be like, oh yeah, my wife tells me this all the time. Maybe I should work on that. I'm like, okay, well, let's work on that, right? Because I don't have to tiptoe.
Yeah. And so then how do you handle working with narcissists? Because that's something that I can't do.
Yeah,
Because like
well, I can't.
with hypnosis like narcissists and people with like I'm not sure what the term is called anymore.
Like
More than one
dissociative.
personality. Yeah,
Yeah.
dissociative. Neither of those are able to work with hypnosis because like I don't know, like I was talking to someone the other day and and it's always a weird thing to say too, because then like I'm like, yeah, I can hypnotize anybody unless this is what's going on. But then she was saying that she was at a one of those stage hypnosis shows and she couldn't be hypnotized because like she knows everything that she says is right. And I was like, okay, well I can't say that, okay, you're probably a narcissistic person. But like, and I don't know, like it's a weird thing. Like I don't know if you can say it to someone and can you say it to someone? And then also then how do you work with someone? Because this is like totally out of my wheelhouse. It's just like, no, I can't do shit with them. They're not gonna fucking they're never wrong. So how do you do that? Is that just
Yeah.
kind of tell them, call them out on whatever?
Yeah. So you've got kind of like two different categories, right? You have what can be referred to as like a malignant narcissist, and those are the stereotypical woke verbiage ones of people being like, you're a narcissist, like you're egotistical, you're all this. And then you have fragile narcissists, and those arguably can be a little bit more challenging because you do have to use kid gloves with them, even though it's counterintuitive, right? Like you have to treat them like a wounded little child, even though they're convinced that they're Achilles, right?
Right.
And so usually
Interesting.
my approach with somebody who struggles with, we'll just say narcissistic tendencies, is, I just talk with them at first, right? Get to feel them out, because sometimes people do like a puffing chest or bravado with a new therapist, right? Like, I don't want you to see how defective I think I am, right?
Right.
And so depending on how that kind of transgresses, and we go along with that, and if they have release assigned and their partners or their kids or their parents, give me collateral information, then after I'm like, yeah, this is what I think it is, right? Then usually I'll again, every person's a little bit different, but sometimes I'll just tell them, I'll be like, hey, this is a hunch that I have. I don't know if I'm correct, because you better than I know you, but from my experience, this is kind of some tendencies that I'm seeing. And I'll just kind of list off some things, you know, like, do you feel like this, or do you agree with this statement, or do you, and what I'm really doing is I'm reading off the diagnostic criteria from the DSM. I just don't have the book in front of me. And they'll be like, yeah. And so, you know, if I meet that cap, and I'll be like, do you want to know kind of like what I'm asking about? Like, this is a specific type of thing. And a lot of times they'll be like, what, narcissism, right? And I'll be like, yeah, actually, you know, so why was that your first thought? Well, I've been told that multiple times in my life. Interesting. By whom? Right. And then we just have a conversation about it. And then once I kind of we have that establishment of like, I think I know what you maybe don't want me to know, right? The very next kind of thing that I'll tell them is, look, you get a bad rap, right? Like, narcissists get a really bad rap. Because again, I love working with them. I mean, do they get on my nerves sometimes? You know, do certain individuals? Sure, you know. But I'll
Be
never forget,
across
I
the
had a
board.
supervisor. Do what?
I said that can be across the board. That's not
Yeah,
just, yeah.
with anybody. But I
Yeah.
had a supervisor a long time ago, and I think it was probably like my first professional exposure to somebody who diagnostically was, you know, in that box. And she said, you know, Bailey, narcissists are like Fabergé eggs. You have these beautiful, gilded, you know, jeweled Fabergé eggs that are just beautiful. She was like, and then you crack it open and it's just a big steaming pile of shit. And she was like, and that's really what's going on with them is deep down underneath the facade and the image management and the I know more than you do and you know I'm right, you're wrong is a really crippling perspective of defectiveness, failure, not feeling good enough. And so what works for me and the reason I guess I can do it is because when I work with somebody, even if I'm working with a 50-year-old man, I also envision kind of a 6-year-old little boy sitting right next to him who's the 6-year-old version of himself, right?
Sure.
So then when
So
I get feedback, I get to try to figure out how to deliver it to where it can heal from a 6-year-old perspective, but it can be accountability from a 50-year-old perspective.
yeah, and I mean, like, without healing that 6-year-old perspective, there's not really, I don't know. I feel like that's something that's got to be worked on kind of before you can get to that 50-year-old perspective of life, and not the 6-year-old. And like, that's something that comes up, like, with some of the stuff, like, you know, someone thinks that they have this whatever event that happened, let's say when they were, you know, 15 or something, but then they think like that's the event that really, sorry, my cat's jumping around. Really took their life one way, down a different path, but then finding out that like something else also happened that was happened when they were three, that was like way, you know, put away in their head, and that they got pulled out. And like, you know, there's always, yeah, something that needs to be. I don't know. I haven't really had too many where it's the sole reason they're there is because of something that happened, whatever for the moment is that they're going in there. There's usually, you know, something else that's happening. And like, I don't know, like, as long as they get in that first one, then, you know, like, they're gonna, you know, hopefully at least have a little bit of getting to a better place. And I don't know, yeah, or anything like that.
If they come in for one thing and then there's something else.
Yeah, that ever
Yeah. And especially working with addicts, right? And listen, I don't use that term in a derogatory way. You know, that term is kind of an umbrella for self-labeling, if you will. But I mean, that's the majority of, if not all, of every addict I've ever worked with is you're coming to me for a substance use issue or a, you know, an intimacy disorder, but underneath there is just some unaddressed trauma, right?
Right. And yeah. And I mean that, like, with trauma and stuff too, like that, until that's resolved, like it's always the fight or flight, and then you can't learn new things, and you're always making snap decisions of something, even if you think you're thinking it out and planning it out, it's still like, I have this snap decision. And I don't know, it's an interesting one. And then so with then with the substance abuse, how'd you get into that, or one of those, like, did both of those sort of happen around the same time, or did you get kind of one of those your specialty and then decide to do the other, or did you find some of those kind of would go hand in hand, or was there overlap or anything like that?
I think in a weird way, it's like my fate was picked for me. I feel like I almost didn't really have a hand in it, even though I did. Started off, I got a job as a case manager because I needed a job. I actually graduated with a biology degree and I had a psychology degree, and I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I got a job as a case manager in a facility. It was a substance abuse facility, and I had no experience in substance abuse, and I ended up taking the job and loved it. Oh man. And it was a state funded facility that served the indigent population. And I fell in love with it. And I was like, I guess I should just do this for my career. So I went and got my master's, and I was like, okay. And then, you know, as my times progressed, I went from a case manager to a counselor, and then to an admissions director, and then to the lead therapist. And I kind of did that. And so after about, oh, I don't know, 6 years of being in the substance abuse field, an opportunity arose where, and again, I didn't really have control over a lot of these things. And our facility was being closed down. The satellite facility of a major company that I had worked at was being closed. And so HR came, they did their severance talks with everybody. And they said, hey, you know, do you have an interest in moving to Arizona? Because I was living in South Carolina. And I was just like, yeah, sure, whatever, cool. You know, I'm down. And they were like, because we really love you and we want to keep you on with the company. But there's no positions at our substance use facility. And I was just like, all right. And they were like, you can either work in the eating disorder clinic or you can work in the all men sex addiction facility. And I was just like, 1000%, I'm not working with eating disorders. I will work with male sex addicts. And so I interviewed, got the job. And then, you know, that was a steep learning curve because I had never really had exposure to what that was. And I got into that. And I think I loved that even more than I loved substance abuse. And I was like, how can I love, you know, this even more? And since then, I mean, I guess that old saying goes, and the rest is history. And I've just kind of mirrored the two, because I'm one of the few, like in my state where I worked before, I was one of like, I don't know, three or six sex addiction therapists in the entire state.
Cool.
Yeah. And so it, you know, I worked in the Bible Belt. And so a lot of people were just like, oh, you're a sex addiction therapist. Interesting. Right.
Bless your heart.
Yeah. Bless your heart. And I found that there's a big overlap. So roughly 60% of drug and alcohol users are sex addicts. So I got to a really neat vantage point where I got to work with people and help them identify another kind of addictive component that had gone untreated and undiagnosed, which was arguably the reason why they kept relapsing with their substances. And so by kind of burning the candle at both ends, it gave them the missing piece. And that to me is like the ultimate reward. So sorry, that was kind of a long answer to your question.
Hey, you know, that's what I like. I was talking about that this morning. Like, I would rather, have that than me pulling for answers. So like, it's great. And I like it that way. And so one of the things though you had said, 1,000% no on the eating disorder. Why that?
Because I didn't have a lot of experience as a professional, as an eating disorder
Okay.
person with eating disorders. And so I think some of it was ego, to be honest with you. I think I wanted to shine in my area of expertise, and I didn't want to go into that area. But
Yeah.
sex addiction was such a, 'cause I'm kind of an underdog therapist. I like working with the weird, the societal outcasts are my favorite population. And I've also worked more with males than I have with females. And so going to an all-male sex addiction facility was like gold for me as a therapist. I was like, this is going to be the coolest thing ever. And to date, it's been my favorite job I've ever had.
Cool. And so, I mean, yeah, like every time someone's calling in, or are you, do you have an office, or are you remote with your,
Yeah, I go in. Yeah, I have an office, and it's in school.
Okay. All right. So then, yes, people go up. So you're like, right, when people are about to open the door, it's like whatever, 58, 59 of the hour. And you're, what kind of mindset are you in right then? Like what's going through your head? Like if it's someone, I guess, new as opposed to someone that's been there before with you.
I think the first thing that I want to kind of figure out is, number one, do they want to be there, or is somebody giving them an ultimatum, right? Because that's going to change how I approach it. And so if they're like, I found you on my own, I just really wanted, I need some help with this, that's usually a little bit more of a natural progression. But somebody who comes and they're like, yeah, my teacher sent me, or my mom sent me, or whatever. I'm always like, do you want to be here? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, is that the answer that you think I want to hear, or do you actually want to be here? And they're like, I don't want to be here. And then I just am like, now we can start, right? Like, now we can actually start kind of. And I was like, and listen, what do you, and I just let them man that ship. Like, what do you want to do if you don't want to be here? Because again, I think going back to what you said at the beginning of the episode is, I might not be able to help them achieve a specific goal, right, through fancy clinical interventions. But what if I can't do that? Then at the very least, I want them to leave saying, I felt good in that environment. I felt respected, and I felt safe. So when they are ready or they are willing, I've removed that barrier for them.
And I mean, I get that too, like with people for smoking. And like I don't really like working with the smoke, stop smoking hypnosis. A lot of it's like, are you still smoking? Like, or like who told you to stop smoking? Like, oh, okay, yeah. Someone, my significant other said they don't want me to smoke anymore. And I'm like, okay, well, stop feeling bad about it and go smoke all you want when you want to stop. Like we can have a we can do that, but like, yeah, I'm like, why? Like you said, they own it there, and then it's like, okay, here we have something. It's not this trying to have that. It almost is like the Fabergé egg with the shit inside, the steaming pile of shit. And it's the same thing. Like you can't really do anything if it's just, yeah, I'm fucking, I really want to be here. And then it's like, well, yeah, I don't. But I'm here, or else I'm gonna be, in a different position than I'm in right now.
Yeah, for
And
sure.
yeah.
I would tell
And
people all the time, I'm like, you can save us both a lot of time and energy if you're just honest about whether you want to be here, honest about like whether you used or acted out. Like, I'm not here to judge you. And I would tell them, like, if you go into a doctor and you're like, hey doc, my stomach hurts, and the doctor's like, why? And you're like, I don't know. And he orders all these labs and tests, and it comes back that everything's fine. And you're like, oh, well, I did eat an entire chocolate cake by myself. it would have saved everybody so much time, right? I've been like, oh,
Yeah.
well, that makes sense. You ate a whole chocolate cake, your tummy hurts. Like, let's, figure that out as opposed to figuring out like all these other things that it could be. And so, and I'm just like, it's going to be a lot easier if you just, kind of lay your cards out and we can just both go from there.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the more that you tell, like the better your care is going to be. Like, I found this out with going to acupuncturists and natural medicine people, like telling them fucking everything. Like I would just like, especially acupuncture was weird. That was like I felt like I'd be able to tell them stuff, but then they were like, oh yeah, like so you if you do that, then we can do this and this will take care of it. And it's like, oh shit, okay. Like that's where people should be wanting to get when they're going to the to go meet with someone that can, do good for them and put them in a better place. Like, I don't think there's many people who are in any sort of field of that nature who are like, well, yeah, I don't want them to fucking get better unless they're trying to just get money, which maybe, but maybe there are some of those. But for, I mean, for the most part, like, I think most everyone wants you to get better. And like, I don't want to. I don't know. I'll tell people I don't want to fucking see you. If you want to come work on something else down the road, but if this is like all you want to work on, like good, get the fuck out. Like we're done. Like you're fucking good now. Go on your
Yeah.
way. Like
Spread your
go be
wings.
happy.
You're a
Yep.
beautiful butterfly now.
Yeah.
Fly off.
Yeah. Yeah. Go for it. Like tell your friends if you want, but like yeah, I don't need to see you anymore. You're good. And so if people want to before they are. I don't know. Let me rephrase that. So, when people are wanting to reach out to work with you or to find out more about you, how are they going to do that?
So, because I'm not doing private practice, I'm just gonna I'll give you my podcast handle, or podcast email. And do you want me to say it or just send it to you?
You can say it, yeah, and then I'll.
So
You can,
it's Wild
yeah.
Side Podcast, and that's WILDCIDE, Wild Side Podcast at gmail.com. And that'll go to me and you can ask me, like if you're like, hey, I, heard this podcast and I might have a problem, or, I can definitely give links and, stuff like that, contact information to people who may be in your area or kind of a place to start.
Okay, yeah, you did. Okay, so yeah, and then so then people can listen to your podcast then as well. And so like
Yeah,
plus
it's going to be totally different. Like, it's not a mental health and, what is it called? Like self-fulfillment journey. I have a true crime podcast, right? And
oh.
so yeah, it's just it's totally like outside of like these types of interviews that I do, but we interview professionals and so we'll have like a case and we'll talk about it. And it might be about like we have one coming up in a couple of weeks that is about clergy abuse. And so then we interviewed somebody who is a survivor and an advocate around clergy abuse. And so we bring on just professionals from all different kind of niches of the field that true crime touches in any way, shape, or form. So it's pretty fun.
Okay. So speaking of true crime, do you know the Jinx? There was a the guy's name was Robert Durst. And so
No.
okay, well anyway, so this guy his family, huge New York real estate family, and he ended up, let's see, getting involved in some murder accusations, I guess, against him. And they did this documentary about him. It was on HBO probably like 10 years ago. And yeah, and then they had a trial for him maybe a few years ago, and then he died, and then they just released a new episode about it. And there, like, I think there's been two now. I've seen the first one, but that's been an interesting one. I Might be able to send something else your way that might be of your interest
I'm totally open to it.
about it I, about something else. But yeah, so cool. Yeah, that's gotta be fun. So like that's weekly then ish.
Yeah, we release a case every week, and then every 2 weeks, it's a case that corresponds with the interview. So.
Cool. Okay. All right. And so, yeah. I mean, so would you say you spend more time on the podcast or more time on the research before the podcast for
Oh,
each episode?
the research. Gosh, there's so much. Like, and it depends on how in depth I want to go, but usually it's like, anywhere from 10 to 20 pages for one episode. And so it's hours and hours and hours of research just for one episode.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. Like that's a bunch to get in there, and cool. Yeah, I don't know. My sister and my brother-in-law are very much into true crime stuff, and so like I always get stuff from them or send it their way. So I'll send it their way as well, and I'll check it out. But thank you so much for being here, and
Thanks
I'm
for
happy
having
we
me.
got to talk. Yeah, about whatever and everything. So
Thanks,
I
Dusty.
like
I'm just
yeah,
kidding.
perfect. You win. That's I love it. I love it. I love it. Thank you. And I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll stay in touch
Yeah.
and do something again. All
I
right.
appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Right. All right. That's Bailey Hauser. So thank you everyone for watching and listening. And she popped me at the end. So good on her. That fucking got me. That was good. So, thank you everyone for watching or listening. You can check me out, rustydiamond.net or hypnosisisgreat.com. And that is the show. Man, boom.
It's Rusty Diamond, motherfucker. It's Rusty Diamond, motherfucker.